Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Thank you, Josh. Today, I'd like to welcome a truly fascinating leader and a friend, Katie Koch. She's president and CEO of TCW Group and a member of the board of directors. Katie has been in this role about a year and a half and was recently appointed to the NASDAQ board. TCW is a leading global asset management firm, which manages almost $200 billion in assets. Katie's career also includes a distinguished tenure of almost 20 years at Goldman Sachs. Welcome to the podcast, Katie.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. It's so nice to meet you. Katie, you've had a remarkable career in finance and investment, and I think you're just getting started.
I hope so.
Can you share some pivotal moments that you've had or even experiences from earlier in your career that have really helped to shape your leadership style and your approach to business today?
Absolutely. And I'm going to go back even further than that, because when I reflect on kind of whatever modicum of success I've had in life in my career, I think a lot of it comes back to my parents. So from my mom, I really got the gift of confidence and risk taking. She always pushed me by asking the question, what choice would you make if you knew you wouldn't fail? Hmm. And that was really important to me developmentally, because I was a very earnest, kind of straight A student, very focused on managing the downside. And she knew that I needed to push myself more to take risk. And that's really given me the confidence to do things like get the internship at Goldman Sachs, even though I was only a literature major at Notre Dame, and ultimately to take the leap to lead TCW. And it's been my experience that if you actually aren't aware of what people think you're supposed to be able to do, there's a lot less barriers to going and doing that thing. And so I'm grateful to her for that.
I love that.
And I just would say, I had to give my dad a little bit of billing and credit here too. So one thing that he really helped me with was authenticity. And he always had the advice to me, Katie, you should just be yourself because everybody else is taken. So it's a really great gift, because authenticity actually is a superpower. People want to do business with people that they like and trust. And the only way to be that person is to be authentic. And I will always trade conformity for authenticity.
Well, we truly appreciate that. And thank you again for being here. So let's go back a little bit to this concept of risk taking, right? Mm-hmm. So out of school, you joined Goldman Sachs, one of the leading financial institutions in this world, and had a rocket ship of a career early on, spending almost 20 years there. What led you to take that risk, to lead an organization, to move your family cross country?
So I did have an extraordinary career at Goldman, which is an incredible organization. We can talk more about it. I'm very grateful for all the training and opportunity I got there. But when I had the chance to come to TCW, aside from really wanting to live in LA, which has a lot of upsides.
You're my neighbor now.
Yes, we're neighbors now. There's a lot of things to love about Southern California for sure. It really was the chance to build a team, build a culture, build a business, have impact, and hopefully a really great legacy. That was very motivating to me personally.
You represent a new generation of leadership at TCW. How are you navigating through legacy, and what are you doing to try to introduce fresh ideas and to foster a new dynamic, forward-thinking approach? And is there anything that you're doing or you've done that you feel is really shaking things up?
TCW has an incredible heritage. And any of these companies that have great brands, great heritage, great legacy, the trick is really respecting that while evolving the institution for the future. Bob Iger talks about that with Disney a lot. Let's respect the heritage, evolve for the future. And at TCW, I do want to spend just a second on the heritage. It's pretty extraordinary. There's not many standalone asset managers that have been around for 50 years, which is what TCW has been around for. So it was founded by a guy named Robert Day, who many people listening to this podcast will know. He is a scion of the Keck family, which established and ran the largest independent oil and gas producer in the country until it was sold to Mobil in 1984. And what's really admirable about him is that he went out and started a business that had obviously nothing to do with the family business. And it's been extraordinarily successful. It's a privately held company, which I think is a better setting in which to run an asset manager. There's high levels of employee ownership, a very unique investment culture that we need to preserve at all costs. There's also a very value-oriented discipline. And those are all the things that we have to maintain if we're going to continue to succeed. And so some things that we're working on is taking existing capabilities and putting them in different vehicles. So, for example, exchange-traded funds, which many of our clients want, the ease of trading and the lower cost associated with ETFs. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of clients looking for more exposure to alternatives. We've done private credit. We have a 25-year track record in private credit, but we're building more alternative credit capabilities because both our institutional and our wealth clients are looking for those types of capabilities. And then finally, something that I've really been focused on and leading the company is cultivating great partnerships. And what I mean by this is having kind of the humility to know what our core competency is, which is producing excellent long-term investment results for our clients. And then the humility to say, where could we partner with someone that might be able to provide us a better outcome? And so we've partnered with State Street on our middle office. We've partnered with BlackRock, Aladdin, or in the process of doing that around some of our trading systems. And we've partnered with PNC.
Yes, thank you for that.
Of course, we can talk more about that, but an incredible partnership that we're building in private credit where we can lean into the tremendous both origination as well as underwriting capabilities of PNC. And you'll see TCW do more of that. I'm a really big believer in finding great partners, and it's just a great way to actually speed up the building of the business.
You talked obviously about the evolution of products and the evolution of what you guys are doing. Talk for a second about what are TCW's core capabilities? Because you're constantly balancing disciplined investing mm-hmm. with managing the client experience.
Right.
Right. So talk a little bit about how you do that and what you think really differentiates TCW.
Absolutely. Being an independently privately held asset manager is a big differentiation versus many of the other structures that are out there. And that really allows us to align our interests very aggressively with our clients, which I think is a huge differentiation. And then in terms of kind of philosophy and process, it is this multi-decade demonstrable track record of disciplined security selection. As an example, we've been investing in private credit for 25 years. We've had 6 losses. So we are really wow. differentiated in terms of investment outcomes across the platform. And the final thing I would say that TCW is uniquely known for and good at, and we continue to prosecute this edge, we show up as liquidity providers when others can't or won't. And that is a phenomenal way to create outsized returns for clients. We'll be quite liquid and conservatively positioned, and we'll wait for volatility or a break in the market. And then we will lean in with our clients' assets to take advantage of those dislocations. And that is where the money's in the waiting, right? One of our investment gurus, Charlie Munger, said that very often, like it is in the patience and the waiting, and then finding those inflection points to lean in. And we've got a long history of that. So just as a final example, last year, our credit team was one of the largest investors in the world in Credit Suisse senior holdco bonds, which no one wanted to really touch when they were going under their stress. And while others were running out the door, we put a ton of money to work in credit, and many examples of where we've stepped in to be a liquidity provider.
I want to go back to 2 things that you mentioned. I love the concept of respecting the heritage. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned culture.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the importance of culture and what it is. What is the culture at TCW and why is it so important?
A culture is everything in any company. As someone who has analyzed companies and I've been in asset management for a long time, when you look at the difference between the winners and losers in any sector, it generally comes down to culture. So I do believe it's the preeminent thing to get right in the running of any company. At TCW, we talk about 3 elements of our culture. It's humility, collaboration, and respecting diversity of opinion. Mm. Humility is just delighting in the things that you don't know. being open to the possibility of being wrong. I always say to our teams that you're either humble or about to get run over. There's only two states of possible being and investing. It's something I try and emulate myself all the time, and I have lots of opportunities to demonstrate humility. The second on collaboration, which kind of sounds like kumbaya, let's hold hands, and people might not take it that seriously. They'll think about that as being soft. I think it's quite essential to successful investment outcomes and to the running of a business. So we need to work across disciplines and sectors to get the right answer for clients. And so we're really pushing the team to do that. And also, if you get a group of people working together in a common cause, there's a lot of magic in that. One of the things I was taught on the board at Notre Dame, and Father Jenkins, he made this comment to me during a board meeting that humans are actually want to get pulled out of their own self-interest. And that's actually really interesting. It's true. Like, that is the natural gravity of humans. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves.
Right.
That's like why we have an epidemic of loneliness, because we've been pushed in the opposite direction for COVID and technology and other reasons. But actually, most people want to be pulled out of their self-interest and be part of something bigger. And so collaboration is about working across disciplines and also tapping into this natural human instinct to want to believe in something bigger than themselves to really win for our clients and for the business. And then finally, diversity of perspective is just the concept that in investing and also in running a business, the healthy tension of variant perspectives is really important to getting to differentiated outcomes. And if you can kind of do those three things right, you can be humble, you can get people to believe in something bigger than themselves and work together, and you create an environment where people respect diversity of opinion, what you actually create is something called psychological safety. And that's the idea of the ability for consistent interpersonal risk-taking. And it's pretty much the hallmark of any successful team, sports, private sector, public sector, is to have that psychological safety. And so we focus a lot on this for both the investment culture and the culture of running TCW.
So, Katie, I must tell you, I've had the pleasure of meeting a number of CEOs. Mm-hmm. And how much you've thought about leadership and your approach to leadership is really, really impressive.
Thank you.
As a first-time CEO, kind of how did this evolve? Maybe talk about leaders, influences in your life, mentors throughout your career that kind of made you so well prepared to lead such a large organization.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. And on the question, I mean, I've had the privilege of working with some of the greatest corporate leaders in America. On the mentor side, I just wanted to make one unsolicited comment around mentorship. So we often have interactions with people where they ask me or other people in our company, will you mentor me? And then they come to you and they ask you for something. And I want to challenge everybody that's looking for mentorship or sponsorship to actually approach it in the opposite way, which is to really think, like any relationship in life, we have to deposit before we withdraw. And I've had some amazing mentors and sponsors, but all of those relationships have started with me saying, I really respect that person. I want to be closer to them. What can I bring to them?
Yeah. What do you bring to the table?
What do I bring to the table? What could I do for them, even in a small, modest way, before I go and ask them for mentorship? So you asked about mentors and sponsors. An example would be Allison Mosh. She is the chair of investment banking at Goldman Sachs, was on the management committee. I heard her speak at something and I said, wow, that woman's phenomenal. Like, she's so smart, she's so authentic, she knows how to lead, she knows how to cover clients, I want to meet her. But instead of going and saying, Allison, will you mentor me? I really took a step back and I said, what could I do for Allison? And I was running an equity business at that time. And I thought what might be helpful to her, since we invested in some companies that she covered as a banker, is give her a perspective from what investors thought of these companies that she might be able to bring from a banking standpoint. And so we started those conversations and we built this great relationship. And she's someone I still talk to every week. And just to tell people, just to end on this concept of the importance of relationships, I learned a lot from her. We built this great relationship. I tried to add value. She helped me through my career at Goldman. And when TCW was looking for a new CEO, it has three groups of shareholders: employees, Nippon Life, which is Japan's largest life insurance company, and Carlyle Group. And Carlyle Group called Allison, who used to run financial sponsors at Goldman, and said, who's a really talented person person that we could talk to about leading TCW. And she said, you should call Katie. She's like, she'll never go from Goldman.
She's still on the management committee at Goldman at this time?
Yes, but she didn't say to recruit her. Don't get her in trouble for that. She didn't say to recruit, but she just said she's someone who'll give you perspective and she can give you names. And I met them and then I ended up becoming the candidate myself. But I say that to you just like, you can't think about it ever, these relationships, like what you're going to get out of it. You start with what can I put into it? And then you'll be amazed at the multiplying effect of that. And then I'll just end by saying the other person I've had exposure to through Goldman Sachs, Adina Friedman's the CEO. I'm on the board of NASDAQ now. And I'm obviously there to try and add value to the NASDAQ shareholders, but I'm just getting a masterclass in leadership from her too.
That's
She's
amazing.
Incredible. She's so enthusiastic about the business, has so much passion, which really comes through and endears a lot of shareholders to her as well as her own people. She's an outside person, good at relationship building, but she's got great mastery of the business and she has tremendous followership of her people. And so it's really great for me to see her in the boardroom as someone who's been a successful CEO when I'm a first-time CEO.
So you've managed investors for over 20 years.
That's right.
What makes a great investor?
There's two characteristics that I think really differentiate and make great investors. One's impossible and the other one's really difficult to replicate. So the first is just time. There is no substitute for time. We talked about the private credit business run by the extraordinarily talented Rick Miller. He's our CIO there. He's been doing private credit as long as anybody. 25 years, if you've been doing that, it means that you've done it through recessions and multiple rate cycles.
Yeah.
And you just can't replace that. You've seen it. You get pattern recognition from it. You've invested it against different backdrops, and it's impossible to replicate. And the wisdom that comes out through the experience of investing in multiple cycles is really tantamount to success. And the second one is discipline. What I mean by that is having the discipline of philosophy and process that you can execute without emotion, regardless of what the market environment brings to you. And so I see that on, you know, with Brian Whalen, who leads our liquid fixed income team. We've been a little bit more defensively positioned in our fixed income portfolios now working for us. But there's periods of time where that value orientation doesn't work for you. And it's really hard emotionally to come to work every day and have your peers positioned differently than you, the market giving you different signals, but you have a disciplined philosophy and process that you can continue to execute. And you have surrounded by great people that are also steeped in that philosophy and process. And you're able to put kind of the blinders on and move forward and deliver what your clients expect you to deliver. But the only way that you can do that is to be anchored in the discipline. I just find it interesting because clients always want some magic, like shiny answer about what makes a great investor. But in my experience over the last 20 years, those are the two things, just the time and the experience and the discipline to keep prosecuting the process.
All right, let's stay on investing for another minute here. I don't know about the two of you, but I can't turn on the TV, the radio, or go to a news site online without hearing or reading something about how unpredictable the market is today. Your job is to protect your client portfolios, but you also want to grow them. How do you do that during uncertain times?
This is a really important question because at the heart of it, investing is actually trying to predict the future during completely unpredictable circumstances.
Right.
it's really hard. So yeah, things are unpredictable now, but I would argue, having done this for 20 years, like there's always something unpredictable and whatever we all think is going to happen, the only thing I know is that something else happens. I mean, that's the job. I think what's problematic right now is that we know that we're heading into a decelerating environment. Maybe it's a soft landing, maybe it's a recession, but growth is slowing. And what's incongruous with that is that valuations are very stretched, whether it's equity markets or fixed income markets, in particular credit markets, they're at a record tight. So equity valuations, record highs, and credit markets, record tights. So how do we navigate that for clients? It kind of goes back to this concept that we are remaining relatively conservatively positioned. We have liquidity available to us in our liquid portfolios, where we would be underweight credit, as an example, and overweight really high quality mortgage-backed securities. That's how we would be positioned in liquid fixed income markets. And in private credit, we're just not deploying as much capital in regular way direct lending. We don't have to. We're not a forced lender because we don't run a bunch of retail products where inflows are coming in and we have to invest those. And so we're going to wait both in public and private markets for the fat pitch. And it will come. I don't know what will be the trigger for it to come. I don't know what's going to ultimately create the volatility. But given how late we are in the cycle, that moment will come for us and we'll capitalize on that on behalf of our clients. And then the only thing I would just say in equity markets is, and this is not so much of the moment, but a kind of a long-term perspective. We think clients are, because of the way that indexes are constructed, are underweight some of the themes that are really going to create the most wealth over the next decade. And so we have launched a series of ETFs to help them with thematic investing, which is around climate transition, supply chain disruption, and also AI.
AI is everywhere, and nobody can escape it. But some are embracing it more than others. And I know it's become a major theme at TCW, even with your AI ETF and other ongoing efforts to build capabilities and better serve your clients' needs. How do you see AI being embraced by TCW in the asset management space?
So I want to start answering that question by just giving a mental framework for where I think we are in AI. So I use the internet, which is easy kind of for people to understand. I think it's a very relevant parallel. The internet was created, I think, by the government in the 1970s.
So for our listeners, it was not created by Al Gore, yeah. Just so you know. It was created by the government in the 70s.
Someone should Google that, but I think that's like, it was created many decades ago. And then I do know that it was widely popularized in 1995, mid-90s, by Marc Andreessen and Netscape because it brought about a browser that made it user-friendly. And so from an AI perspective, I mentioned that we had an AI ETF. We launched that 8 years ago. AI strategy 8 years ago. So we've done it long before ChatGPT. But with ChatGPT, it's kind of like the Netscape moment that it's actually focused all of our attention on the transformative impact of AI. And if you just stick with me for a second on that parallel and that comparison between internet and AI, if we're now at the early 90s, what could happen from here? Okay, well, we're going to have a massive investment in capacity, right? Mostly what's benefited so far is the infrastructure company supporting AI. That's going to happen. We'll probably get to some euphoria, which we haven't gotten to yet in terms of valuations around AI. There'll be some destruction. And then there'll be this long slope of massive wealth creation. Mm. And if you go back to the internet, Netscape didn't even survive, but we created trillions of dollars of market cap through the internet and the web, just the fangs. Most of those, not all of them, but most of them are an internet-related play. And so that's what's going to happen with AI. It's going to get overbuilt. There'll be too much euphoria. There'll be some correction. But over the long term, there'll be one of the greatest wealth creation opportunities probably over the next decade. It's impossible to time, so I'd encourage people to be invested in it, to be patient, and to be active, because as we just illustrated, the winners and losers will change over time as that technology unfolds. As it relates to what we do at TCW, I was talking about the importance of partnership. I can hire the world's best investors. We have the world's best investors at TCW. We also have some great technologists. They're incredible. But the world's leading AI engineers, they don't want to work at TCW. Yeah. They want to be at one of these big platforms. And so we're a cloud client through Azure, and we have a partnership with Microsoft where we are actually developing use cases on how to use AI. I'll give you one quick specific one. CLO documents are 800 pages. We're using AI to go through those documents more quickly to focus on the most important subjects that we want to dig into. We're using it around sustainability exclusions in Europe. We've built our own platform in partnership with Microsoft, and we have some really great use cases of how to implement in the business.
But humans will still be making investment decisions?
Humans will still make, and I'm long human beings. I really am. I think like this idea that all the jobs are going to get destroyed, they didn't get destroyed in the internet. We just created different jobs. Like there were less retail jobs, but now we have tens of millions of web developers. So AI is going to destroy some jobs and create other jobs. And anyway, to answer your question on investing, I am long human intellect.
Good to know.
Still an amazing advantage at taking disparate pieces of information and coming up in a cogent thesis about where the future is headed. I just think we can be augmented with technology, and I believe in that, and we're trying to embrace it.
We're hearing, and please tell us if this is accurate, that private credit is all the rage right now. Is this a fad, or do you see this as having long-term sustainability? And if so, what trend is going to evolve?
We are incredibly supportive of the concept that private credit is going to continue to grow and thrive as an asset class. It's not a fad. If you think about the parallel here is public equity markets. Public equity markets have been disrupted by private markets. There's 50% less public companies in the U.S. than there were 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're in the early innings of that happening in private credit. People ask if there's a bubble. There's not a bubble. By definition, for there to be a bubble, you have to have an imbalance between demand and supply. The demand is there because people are willing to trade some liquidity for excess yield, insurance companies for, at the top of the list, but also individuals. And the supply is there because we know from a bank regulation perspective, they can originate and you can
hence our partnership.
Our partnership. Right. They're amazing at originating, but because of bank regulations, they can't warehouse to the same degree. And that's going to keep a constant source of supply. So it is not a bubble. But the final thing I would say is that you need to be very careful on manager selection, because whatever happens when an asset class is hot, people lack discipline. And the one thing that we're focused on under Rick Miller's leadership, who runs private credit for us, is that we are still covenant heavy, we're diligent heavy, we've got great documentation, we have the ability to work out if things don't go our way. And that's what I worry about, is that people may throw discipline to the wind in order to deploy capital. And that's the number one thing that we're vigilant about at TCW. So we're really different, because we do only middle market lending, strong covenants, strong diligence, say no most of the time to lenders, and have experience on the workout. So I feel good. I actually feel great about our ability to win in this environment. There hasn't been a bunch of differentiation in performance in private credit managers because everyone gets to be geniuses when rates are zero. But in this environment, there's going to be a lot of differentiation, and I'm excited about where we're going to land.
Well, Katie, we really appreciate you spending time with us today. As we're getting down to the last few minutes, I'm going to break every podcast rule and give you a broad open-end question, which is, how the hell do you do it? I mean, I know that you took over a year and a half ago as CEO. Yeah. You and your husband moved 4 children under the age of 10 cross-country, new schools, new job.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
A lot of help and some Chardonnay. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. No, but I so appreciate the question. I want to be honest. I have an extraordinary husband who helps enormously. He's a great partner. He's great in helping me raise the family. He has a business as well, but he has much more flexibility than me. Mm. Our moms help out. My sister helps out. We've got great nanny, and it really does take a team. And then I have like the world's best team at work. We didn't get to talk a lot about the people at TCW, but they're A+ in all regards, and they're helping me really a lot with the business. And the last thing I would say is that if you're having fun, which I really am having every day with the team, building the culture, building the business, delivering for our clients, you can take a lot on. And so I feel really fortunate that I'm able to do both. I will say, and I said this during my interview for TCW, that my family is by far the most important thing to me. And they don't get to come first every time, but they come first over time. I'm not sure if my husband would agree with that, but I think my kids would. And it's worked so far. And I'm very grateful for that. And I wouldn't be able to do it without all the people in my life that make it possible.
I love that response. And I'm going to ask you one last question. And it's looking ahead. What legacy do you hope to leave in your industry, in the people that are around you? And what's the impact that you want to have to that next generation of leaders?
To Los Angeles specifically, when I eventually retire from TCW, I want to make it a stronger, better TCW than I inherited. So that's really motivating and drives me. And on a personal leadership level, I would say I really want to show people that you can be empathetic, that you can be kind and humble and still very formidable. One way to prove that is to have success in this role. And that's very motivating to me too.
That's great.
Thank you again. Really appreciate you joining us, and look for great things to come from TCW.
We appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thanks.
Katie, I really appreciate having a chance to get to know you today. It's been an absolute pleasure. On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, thank you all for listening. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, The Language of Executives.